This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
For myself, like, I'm motivated by climate change. Solar is not an end in and of itself, it's a means to an end. When you look out there and you look at where the majority of our carbon is coming from, most of it comes from the electric utility industry. And when you look at the solutions to that, unless you think carbon capture and storage is going to be the panacea that will solve this problem, or you think that the nuke industry should be the panacea that solves it all, you realize that renewables are where it's at.
Listening to the National Dialogue on Energy Policy can be a little discouraging. Not only does it feel like progress is not happening fast enough, it often feels like as a regular person, you're just not going to have any way to influence energy policy. Enter Vote Solar. Vote Solar is a grassroots solar policy advocacy organization that reminds us that all politics is local and that tremendous progress can be made by focusing on local regulatory roadblocks. My guest today on Sea Change Radio is Adam Browning, the executive director of Vote Solar. Driven by a vision of affordable and widespread renewable power, Browning co-founded the organization after a successful campaign in San Francisco for a bond measure that would enable more residents to adopt solar power. While they now have national reach, Vote Solar does not concentrate its efforts on a national front. As Browning likes to say, if your plan involves Congress, it's a bad plan. Listen now as Browning describes how solar initiatives are being advanced from deep blue California to scarlet Georgia on the basis of simple economic sense. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Adam Browning. He's the co-founder and executive director of Vote Solar. It's a nonprofit solar advocacy organization working to bring solar to the mainstream. Adam, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Hey, happy to be here. Thank you.
First, tell us how Vote Solar came about.
Sure. So back in 2001, I was working at the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, and an old college friend, David Hochschild, was working for the mayor of San Francisco, and he had this idea, let's get solar panels on all city buildings. And we started to look at it and did some math, and it looked like the problem with solar is that you needed a long-term payback, but cities were perfect to invest in something that needed low interest rates, long-term payback through bonds. So we came up with this idea of you would issue a bond, put solar and energy efficiency on public buildings, use those avoided energy savings to pay off the bond, and you'd have new sources of clean energy for less than what you would have otherwise invested in the utility. And so we worked with then city supervisor Gavin Newsom and then city supervisor Mark Leno. They've both gone on to bigger and better things, to put this issue on the ballot, ran a ballot campaign, Prop B, and it ended up one of the most fun experiences of my life as it passed with 76% of the vote. After that campaign, that's why you have solar on Moscone Center here in San Francisco and the like, got contacted by a lot of other cities around the country. How can we do this here? There was a big New York Times article, and we just this idea that we should keep the show going. So we quit our jobs to start a nonprofit, initially with the idea of just doing municipal, city-led solar initiatives. As we did that quickly, we figured out that there are a lot of roadblocks at the state level. You needed the right infrastructure. You needed the right access to the grid in order to really make this transformation happen. So we shifted the focus of the organization to really focus on state-level policy, where in this country, that's where most of the leadership, most of the rules of the road really happens, is at state-level energy policy. So since then, we've been working across the country to principally at the state level, to try to put all the pieces in place to grow solar markets. That partly involved in involves removing barriers, but in other places it also involves developing incentives to, again, grow this market so that you can bring down costs and get to a point where solar is truly in the mainstream.
So do you work on state levels to try to push forward renewable energy standards, renewable portfolio standards on a state-by-state basis, or are you looking to just focus on solar? And I guess my question is, are you working hand-in-hand with other alternatives to try to create a larger pie of the alternative energy space?
Yeah, so we absolutely do work on renewable policy writ large. So in California, worked hard to establish the current 33% renewable energy standard that we have here in the state. And, you know, we focus on solar because solar has some particular benefits, but also has some specific needs. It's a it can be a distributed resource. It doesn't have to be a large utility scale. It can be behind the meter that you generate for your own usage and offset your utility purchases, or it can be large solar farms where it's you're selling it to the utility for further resale to other customers. So, you know, we focus on solar because it has some specific policy needs, but it's not like, you know, we really do want to see the rising tide raise all renewable boats. The future isn't one single source above and beyond the others. If we really want to run this grid on intermittent variable resources like renewables, the key is really to tap into a wide variety of different generating resources that can that match their strengths very well. If you look at here in California, solar is clearly strongest during the day. And if you look at the load profile or the generation profile of wind, it's really strongest during the night. They come together like peanut butter and jelly, work very well together. So, and then energy efficiency, that's just, you know, that's good for you wherever you are. So the future isn't just solar, it's everything all pulled together.
So you're a relatively small organization. Give us an idea of your headcount.
Yeah, so we're 11 people right now. Most of our folks in California, but we've got a office in Colorado, an office in New York, and an office in Pennsylvania as well. So we're really trying to expand. I mean, right now, again, most of the leadership when it comes to solar is on a state level. We're not trying to deal with 50 states. It's a 15-state strategy. So you probably have 9 states with good, vibrant solar programs, solar markets at this point in time. We're trying to, we've got a couple of key targets that we're trying to expand in a few more. But really, the state level policy advocacy is where it's at. We have a saying around the office, which is this: if your plan involves Congress, it's a bad plan. It's just really difficult. We would love to see the federal government come in with a comprehensive energy solution to deal with climate change and secure our energy's future. But if you take a good close look at this Congress, you realize that's just not very likely to happen. At the state level, you're closer to democracy. You really are, you know, you're able to meet and deal with policymakers. And it's not just legislators. The public utilities commissions, the regulators have enormous power in all of this. We worked for years in Arizona to develop the current solar market there. And again, it wasn't a single law that passed. It was all really just in the regulatory body, getting them to level the playing field and recognize the value that solar could bring. And Arizona is now the second largest solar state in the country behind California. It is a question of policy in many cases, but not necessarily of lawmakers.
Even though you're only an 11-person organization, where do you get your funds? Is it mostly from individuals, or do you have a few larger investors, contributors?
Sure. No, as a nonprofit, you know, we depend upon our partners for the support to actually make this work happen. So we are the vast majority of our support comes from environmental foundations that want to see this kind of change happen. So places like the Energy Foundation.
Don't let the sun catch you crying. Crying at my front door. You done daddy dirty. He sure don't want you no more. Don't let the sun catch you lying.
Follow the shift to sustainability with Sea Change Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/SeaChangeRadio and on our Facebook page.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to the executive director of Vote Solar, Adam Browning. Adam, you mentioned how Vote Solar sprang out of some progressive legislation in San Francisco. Can you walk us through the journey that that legislation took to become statewide and how you think that the local to state level template is one that's replicable?
Yeah, it's an excellent point. I would say this. The one thing that renewables have that is our largest and most powerful strength is its popularity. You poll Americans across the board, and poll after poll after poll shows that Americans really want to see this transition happen. The question is how do you turn that popularity into strength, into policy change? And at a local level, you're actually, you know, you're much closer to your policymakers and you can make that happen. So here in San Francisco, we were, led a ballot initiative to require city buildings to maximize the use of energy efficiency. In fact, it didn't require it. It provided a financing source for energy efficiency and solar on publicly owned buildings. And, you know, it wasn't very hard to explain to people the benefits of doing this. They got it immediately. And you put it before them in a vote, and they voted for it overwhelmingly. A supermajority wanted to see this happen. So, the key is trying to identify the opportunities where you get to actually vote on solar. The problem is that many of these decisions are made on energy policy are made behind closed doors. Buried in regulatory proceedings that never really see the light of day. So what we try to do as an organization is get people involved in making those and knowing when there are important solar decisions happening at a state level, and then being able to get involved and express their interest in it. So we're at a situation right now where if you look at our goal here is to bring down the cost of solar with the theory that as costs come down, then markets grow and scale rises. So over the past few years, we've seen a huge decrease in the price of solar modules and the price of the actual material. From 2008, the average selling price was about $4.20. We're now looking at 67 cents as the average selling price for solar modules. Just an utter, complete transformation of the cost of the hardware. Just to point out, in 2008, this panel right here, you know, cost basically around $800. You know, now we've seen a drop in price where you're looking at less than $200.
And that's not including the rebates, both state, local, and federal, that comes into this.
This is prior to any rebates, prior to anything else. But so the point I'm trying to make is that the module manufacturers, like we globally, the solar industry is delivering on its promise. Like we built scale by these types of programs, by California, by Germany, by Spain, investing in growing this, showing that there's a long-term market opportunity, and manufacturers stepped up to the plate, build larger factories, built the scale here. The key now, and really having a low cost delivered price of solar, really much more lies in local advocacy. So right now, it's estimated that, you know, while this panel is 67 cents per watt, the cost of to a solar installer of getting the business permits, getting the permits to from your local building code officials to do the actual solar installation is somewhere between 25 and 50 cents a watt. And that's something that's directly within the control of local officials to either, you know, develop a local environment where you're a solar friendly community, where it is easy to do solar installations and low cost to do solar installations, or you can cover it in red tape and make it really hard and difficult to actually do a solar installation. So the point I'm trying to make is that right now, the key pieces of creating a low cost environment to install solar are often in the hand of local policymakers, local leaders, local officials, local communities, rather than waiting on a federal energy policy.
And from a smallish nonprofit like Vote Solar's perspective, does it also play into your strategic interest to go local and state level in order to not butt heads against much more well-funded fossil fuel lobbyists and other nonprofit organizations or for-profit organizations that could lead your projects into dead end? You know, they can be dead on arrival if enough money gets sunk into opposing something like that.
Yeah, I mean, everywhere we work, you know, you've got your supporters and then you've got your incumbents. You know, what I would say again is it's a matter of, again, tapping into and strategically and effectively utilizing the people power, the overwhelming interest in people wanting to see this kind of change actually happen. So, again, we're a small organization of 11 people across the country, but we always partner with local nonprofits, local interests, local environmental groups, local solar industry. There is, you know, all politics is local. They're the ones most directly connected to the local policymakers. So, you know, let's take, you know, California as an example of, you know, the bigger picture of what it is that we're trying to achieve and the struggles that we have in making that happen. And I would say also, you know, when you have big successes, you also bring new challenges. And that's exactly what we're seeing here in California right now. So back in 2006, we worked on this big program that was designed to transform the solar market. So it was called the California Solar Initiative, and it established a $2.2 billion pot of money that was spent in incentives, not just to give out the money, but to lead to a point when you don't need incentives anymore. So it had a very, I think, smartly designed policy design where you had a 10-step program of declining incentives that then got to a point where you could install solar on your roof and generate your own electricity more cheaply than buying it from the utility. And frankly, you know, that was it was designed to be a 10-year long program, more or less. 6 years into it, we're now at the end of that program, and we are phasing out of the incentives, state level incentives here in California for rooftop solar, and transitioning to an incentive-free market. It's absolutely, you know, it's worked exactly the way that it was supposed to work. So now we're here at the point where anybody in California without state-level incentives can install a solar system on their roof, generate their own electricity more cheaply than buying it from the utility. And we are seeing, in some places, increased utility resistance to people going solar on their own. And utilities calling for, saying, you know, hey, people that install their own solar systems, they're not paying their fair share of the grid. And that people that install solar systems should pay fixed charges.
Their grid, basically.
to their grid. Exactly. So, you know, so now that the industry has stepped up, did exactly what it was supposed to do, lowered prices across the board, got to this point where it can continue to generate 100% renewable clean power across the state. There's about somewhere between around 35,000 Californians that are employed in the solar industry right now. So we're seeing a lot of great jobs. Now that we've got to that point where we no longer need solar incentives, the game is changing, and we see resistance to having this. You know, now that we spent all the money on incentives, the you're hearing the calls in Sacramento. Oh, now they should be paying more. This is too much of a good thing. We have to step up our game and articulate why, you know, having, you know, someone that goes solar is actually lowering costs for everybody else, not increasing costs, which is absolutely true. We've done these analyses. We've got them up on our website, and we've been working with policymakers to understand this better.
There's a dark and a troubled side of life. There's a bright and a sunny side too. Though we meet with the darkness and strife, the sunny side we also may view. Keep on sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help you every day. It will brighten all your way if you'll keep on the sunny side of life.
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking with the executive director of Vote Solar, Adam Browning. Adam, you spoke about how module prices on solar panels have plummeted over the last 4 or 5 years. What are some of the other barometers for success that listeners should look at, and what industry insiders like yourself look at to gauge how successful our efforts are? Do we compare it to other countries that have embraced solar earlier in terms of policy, or do we look at kilowatt hours or yeah, gigawatts or penetration per home? What are some of the metrics that you glance at, and what's kind of the next real holy grail for the U.S. in terms of these metrics?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. I mean,
it's probably a little too complicated.
But no, not at all. I mean, for myself, like, I'm motivated by climate change. Solar is not an end in and of itself. It's a means to an end. When you look out there and you look at where the majority of our carbon is coming from, you know, most of it comes from the electric utility industry. And when you look at the solutions to that, unless you think carbon capture and storage is going to be the panacea that will solve this problem, or you think that the nuke industry should be the panacea that solves it all, you realize that renewables are where it's at. So instead of looking at a global agreement on carbon legislation, you know, a Kyoto Treaty, we decided that we would focus instead on trying to make the renewable alternative as cheap and as popular and as prevalent as possible. So our efforts are really around trying to establish sustainable, long-term business models that grow the solar industry so that it can get to the point, combined with other renewables, where we are sufficient in terms of preventing carbon emissions, sufficient to commensurate with the problems, commensurate with dealing with climate change. So here in California, we've got to a point where on the wholesale side, so generation for sale to utility, we've got a requirement that by 2020, utilities have to have 33% of their generation coming from renewables. Utilities in the state have signed enough contracts at this point to get us to success on that. By the next 7 years or so, California will be you know, between 10 and 15% solar powered, which is just a huge transformation. The cost of generating electricity with solar right now is cheaper than building new coal plants. It's cheaper than building new nuke plants. It is on par with building new natural gas fired generation. That's right now. Generating with solar in California is cost effective and cheaper, just without even looking at the environmental benefits, than these other resources. And it's only going to get better. That, we believe, is the path for durable, sustainable change. And we hope to, again, continue to make this resource even more cost effective going forward, so that we can go to other places in the country where, you know, you don't have the same political support, you don't have the same leadership as we have with, say, Governor Brown and Governor Schwarzenegger here in California, where you've got to make much more, your arguments much more on a cost basis, and we'll be in a position to say, all right, Georgia.
They have some sun.
You've got some sunshine there. Those nuke plants that you're trying to build that are getting more and more costly, solar's actually going to be a good resource for you here, and just on a cost basis.
What kind of penetration rates does Georgia have off the top of your head?
That's really quite easy. It's got approximately nada.
Really?
Georgia just, it's very, but it's all changing right now.
Even on a residential level?
It's all changing right now. Just because of this. So Georgia Power just this year filed for Georgia Power filed with the regulators a plan that they want to do 270 megawatts worth of solar over the next 3 years.
And this is Georgia Power, which has traditionally invested a lot in coal.
Coal, nukes, these are not your, you know, granola eating hippies from Berkeley. These are quite different. And this is what it means for solar to come into the mainstream. If you look at very recently, if you look at NRG, they're a utility holding company. They own about 24 gigawatts of coal, nukes, and natural gas. The head of it, David Crane, can't get enough of solar. You Google his name, you'll find, you know, he says over the next 5 years, 80% of the new generation that they build will all be solar. Again, these are mainstream energy companies that are heavily invested in the fossil fuels that are now looking forward, and they're saying solar is actually our most productive new resource. NRG, I mean, they own the naming rights to the Houston Reliant Stadium. These are Texas energy companies building solar increasingly more and more. You know, Mid-American, this is Warren Buffett's company. They're building and buying large solar plants here in California. They own, Warren Buffett is not known for doing stupid financial decisions. They own about 14% of the solar in the United States. This is something that's driven on the economics. It's not being driven out of an environmental desire. It's being driven straightforwardly on the economics of this new generation resource.
The co-founder and executive director of Vote Solar. People can go to votesolar.org to learn more about it. Adam Browning. Adam, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thank you. I was really glad to be here.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by Gene Ammons, Ray Charles, and Don Reno. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week, as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.